Morning. A sign that has hung in our home for nearly 30 years now reads, "God is coming soon, look busy." It was an Advent gift from my then assistant rector, who had just returned from the Holy Land, where surprisingly one can purchase such tchotchke. I laughed, and so have many who have come across it hanging in our home over the years. However, I think of it as I begin every Advent with such apocalyptic scriptures. As Jim Wallace of Sojourners wrote, as we enter another Advent, "For some of us, the Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays may be the only time all year that we see certain relatives. Some probably harbor anxiety or even dread at the difficult conversations on politics and faith that surface during meals with family members who see the world differently than we do. In Advent, our thoughts turn to the meaning of Christ's coming and the deep significance of the season for followers of Jesus, waiting for him to come again, which has special and poignant meaning for us in the deep political and moral crisis in which we find ourselves. In many ways, Advent is my favorite liturgical season because it demands of Christians that we do the work of preparing our hearts for what it means that God came and lived as one of us in a world that needed and needs to be changed. The cover of the December Sojourners magazine has on it this marvelous piece of metal art that looks like an ancient mask worn in religious ceremonies. And it has been made entirely of gun parts. Just as the Plowshares Project in the Diocese of Connecticut works with blacksmiths who teach volunteers to take apart guns and weapons exchanged in church-sponsored buybacks and turns them into gardening tools. Tools used to help plant new life from which springs beauty and sustenance for that life. In a recent Building Faith article by the Reverend Claire Brown entitled "The Apocalypse and Christmas," she writes, "Apocalyptic end times imagery in the Bible is a statement of showing the contrast between God's way of justice, peace, and flourishing, and the realities of human violence and suffering. It is both a judgment on our failure to love one another well, and a holy vision for how we might live into God's dream." The readings for this first Sunday of Advent for this new year A in our cycle offer us an inspirational picture of turning war machines into gardening tools, Isaiah 2:4. The judgment of God that brings love and peace, Psalm 122. The light of God illuminating how we should live together, Romans 13:12. And Jesus' encouragement to pay attention for his coming in the midst of uncertain times, Matthew 24:44. We don't call the peace of God into being by simply talking about it. War and peace, judgment and redemption, living into community as a foretaste of the kingdom, these are daily parts of our human life. Brown suggests that many preachers avoid talking of such things and are often tempted to skip the prophet's warnings and Jesus' eerie talk of the end times for a more cheery theme. After all, this is time to be home eating pie, children laughing, candles, and sweet fat baby Jesus. Yet if we pass over the apocalyptic readings and dodge the hard prophetic witness, we may miss God's invitation to understand the ethics of Christmas. When we avoid talking about these prophecies and their implications, which we can surely see, just look at the 182 candles blazing on the high altar. Each a life taken by a gun, either at their own hand in an instant's desperate access to a deadly weapon, or at the hand of another with no connection to our responsibility for every human life. When we avoid what our scripture warns us of, we communicate that the good news of Jesus' birth, his incarnation in our world and in our hearts, is too flimsy or it's too precious to speak to our struggles in these days. Excuse me. Surely there is sweetness and beauty to the story of Jesus' birth, but it is sweetness that is strong enough to resist hate, and its beauty that transforms through our active waiting here and now. Not too long ago, an article in a psychological journal reported that a modern psychiatrist had polled some 3,000 people or so and asked them simply, "What are you living for?" And he was shocked to find that 94% were simply enduring the present while they waited for something to happen. Waited for children to grow up and leave home, waited for someone to die, waited to be promoted, waited for a new job to come along, waited for kids to finish swim, soccer, football, lacrosse, land practice, waited for the next better year or even tomorrow. Few seem to realize that all anyone really has is today. Yesterday is gone. Tomorrow exists only in hope. In his play, The Time of Your Life, William Saroyan says, "It doesn't make any difference who you are or what you do. 23 and a half out of every 24 hours are spent waiting." A character in T.S. Eliot's play, The Elder Statesman, puts it this way: "If I had the energy to work myself to death, how gladly would I face death? But waiting, simply waiting, with no desire to act, yet a loathing of inaction, a fear of the vacuum and no desire to fill it. It's like sitting in an empty waiting room in a railroad station on a branch line, after the last train, after all the other passengers have left, and the booking office is closed, and the porters have gone." I dare say most of us are tired of waiting. We know all too well that we are in the middle of the play, that is rounding off is still in some sense to come. We're tired, in the words of our first lesson, of waiting for swords to be beaten into plowshares and spears into pruning hooks. How long shall we wait for the Messiah to come again and prove that love lasts longer than hate and that existence cannot ultimately defy its own norm? How long must we wait? It's said that in this world you can put off making up your mind, but you cannot put off making up your life. And that's exactly right. The challenge is how to make up your life when you feel caught in the middle between reality and fulfillment, between future hopes and your present situation, between the first advent and the second. How do you make up your life as you wait in the middle of the play, knowing that the rounding off is still to come? Some respond to the challenge passively, so passively that they miss the present as they wait for their big break, their big moment off somewhere in the future. One parallel example might be buying electrical equipment, an updated cell phone, an iPad, iWatch, a curved screen television, you know, it goes from curved to flat, flat to curve, a new computer. What kind should I get? The state of the art is improving all the time. Remember when 8-tracks were going to be around forever? So I say to myself, maybe I should wait another month or until next year when the prices might be cheaper and the quality even higher. And then I get a hint that a whole new invention is going to be revealed, which will render the previous new one obsolete. Perhaps I should wait and see. And if I keep on waiting, there's a good chance that I'll never do anything. My purchase will always be on hold, and my moment of opportunity will simply slip away from me. Others might respond to the challenge by consuming. spending their days conjugating the verb to have rather than the verb to be. And this is especially true in the month of December, which is most ironic, really, when we consider how often Jesus warns us about the dangers of externalism. He was forever showing us that true greatness is not something outside that we bring inside by competition, but rather true greatness is something that is already inside, something that arrives within us by virtue of our baptism, by virtue of the incarnation, something that in fact goes outside through service and love and generosity. In other words, happiness comes from the inside, not the outside. Jesus, the Messiah, died with only one possession, a seamless robe for which the soldiers gambled at the foot of the cross. Still, there are others who become victims, which is another way of making up your life while you wait. It's not my fault. My life has no direction. It's my parents' fault. It's my spouse's fault. My boss's fault. The generation before me's fault. I'm not responsible. I'm just a victim. I had no choice. And there are others who become aggressive, who compensate for feelings of inferiority and fear of the other by always being on the hunt. Some taking the lives of others with no thought for our connected humanity. Make no mistake, no matter who you are, or how busy you think your life is, or what you do, 23 and a half hours of 24 are spent waiting. Sarian was right, but surely there must be a better way to make up our life while we wait than to spend our days incarnating the style of the procrastinator, the consumer, the victim, or the aggressor. Surely there must be a better way, and thank God there is. Jesus said, you can spend your days watching for God. Watch or keep awake, he says in today's gospel passage from Matthew, for you do not know on what day the Lord is coming. I would guess most of us have seen the t-shirt whose message we might paraphrase, life is hard and then you die. Surely few of us believe that, and that's why we're here today. We're here because we hope, in spite of all the devastating evidence to the contrary, that the ground we stand on is holy, because Jesus Christ walked here and walks here still. We are here because we believe history is ultimately his story. We are here because we believe he will come at last to heal us and save us from ourselves. We are here because we trust that little by little, as we travel through Advent, we are reminded that a spark of light can turn much darkness into light. I think of a young teen who was at boarding school away from her family at Christmas time. And the school's principal visited the teen and asked, what would you like most for Christmas? And the teen looked over at the picture of her parent framed on the desk and said, I want my parent to step out of that frame. That's what we all want. We're waiting and watching for our loving God to step out of the frame of the universe and become present to us, real to us. And the good news of Advent is that God has stepped out of the frame and become one of us, so we might become more like God, like Christ. Perhaps you remember Cosette in Victor Hugo's novel, Les Misérables. Alone in the dark, she so dreaded, straining at the bucket of water she is forced to carry, she is unaware that deliverance is even a possibility. Then Jean Valjean comes up behind her and without saying a word, grasps the handle of the bucket she's carrying. The child was not afraid. And later, Hugo tells us, the child learned to call him father and knew him by no other name. The stranger in the manger, who took an instrument of torture and transformed it into an everlasting symbol of hope and life, has taught us to do the same. Abba, Amma, loving parent, my God. So keep awake, watch, be ready. Name this present God of love and hope everywhere you go. Name God as a very present source of life itself, a life we are called to share with those who are merely waiting for their life to be made up, with those who have lost hope, with those that the world marginalizes, ignores, pushes to the edge, often in fear, the people the world hates, those without love and joy, those who need a share of our hope in God in order to gain justice and wait with zest for mercy, equity, truth, and life itself. Do not wait to live, but live and wait. For the Lord is coming at an hour you do not expect. This Advent, let us take time to wrestle with the hard, the dark, the uncertain, and bring the light of Jesus Christ, Emmanuel, God with us, to shine in every life. Come, O Lord, come down, come in, come among us, come within us. We wait with your name in our hearts and upon our lips, and with our waiting, arms outstretched to others in your love. Amen.